Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. This series is brought to you by Altruist, the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be. Check out humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. Now let's get into today's episode.
Welcome back to another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. I am your host, Tyrone Ross. As always, you know the drill. I got to give it to you. Go to YouTube, smash that subscribe button. Go to all of your places where you listen to podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Hit us up at humanadvisorpodcast.com. What you're about to see is my conversation with Ryan Hughes of Bull Oak Capital. I will tell you this, for all of the practice management geeks out there, you are in for a treat. What you'll see initially is on the walk and talk, we talk about the name of his firm, right? How he came about that name. A lot of us like to name our firms after ourselves to kind of make ourselves feel important. But he has a really unique story behind the name of his firm. And he gives us a little bit about why he chose the location, which I thought was really unique. And the sit down, the takeaway that I've learned in not only from all of these conversations, but his specifically is these, right? Hands-on, truly building a firm. And what you'll learn throughout the conversation is how he literally built his firm. I won't go into how, but literally built his firm with these two things, right? And he gets into the history of that, of what that means to him. One key takeaway is this that I definitely want to get across for all financial advisors out there is the key to planning is to make sure that the clients buy in. And that was the biggest takeaway here. His planning process is extremely robust. And I think no matter who you are, what you do, who you serve, and how you charge for that service, if you do really robust planning, you won't have any problem attracting and retaining clients. So with that said, I won't keep you here any longer. Enjoy the highlights from this conversation. We'll talk to you soon. I appreciate you.
Where my office is, when my clients pull into the parking lot and they walk through the lobby and go up to my floor, like, those are all signals. Like, whenever they come and meet with me, they know who I am, where I work, what schools I went to, how long I've been in the business. I don't have to mention it. I don't bring it up.
All right, so I am back here with Ryan Hughes of Bull Oak Capital. We switched it up a bit. We have a little bit of feng shui outside San Diego vibe going on. What an incredible view you got here, man. This is yes, it doesn't suck, as I always say. It's like you can, at any point in San Diego, you could just turn and point, and it's a beautiful view. Again, thanks for having me, man. It's cool to be here. This is awesome. Lots to cover again. We just kind of went over some surface stuff in the walk and talk, but we don't want to dig a little bit deeper here. So let's just get let's get a little bit more into the firm, right? Okay. And so talk a little bit about the firm, and then what I really want people to get a feel for is you, right? And what makes you you? Because we bring our life experiences and our backgrounds to our practice. So let's just get a feel about, you know, Bull Oak Capital and you.
Sure.
And start wherever, you know, strikes you best.
All right. So I started this firm right out of graduate school. So I worked at Merrill and Morgan and Schwab.
Wirehouse baby.
Yeah. Did that until I call it my quarter-life crisis.
Right.
You know, I hit a wall, and I hated being the sales guy and constantly having to pitch product, and went back to school.
Okay.
So I went to UCLA for business school and knew I wanted to do my own thing. And so that's what I did. So I started the firm, moved from LA down here, no book of business, no network in San Diego.
Right.
I have a wife and two young kids.
Okay.
And so this is where I wanted to raise my kids and my family.
Okay.
And
so you moving here to start the firm wasn't...
To start the firm.
It was to start the firm, or was it family first and then the firm? Okay.
Yeah, I knew, my wife and I knew that we wanted to come back down here to San Diego.
Okay.
I was stationed out here in the Navy.
Okay.
And my wife went to school out here.
Okay.
And so our heart is here. Our heart wasn't in LA.
Right.
We just had to find a way to get back. And I knew if I started my firm in LA, there was going to be no way that I would move down here. So it was either now or never.
Okay.
So 2014, came out here, launched the firm.
Right.
And I was a bit naive in terms of how quickly the firm would grow. It did not grow fast at all.
Right.
First year or two was rough.
Right.
I mean, it was, stress was high. It was not easy. Quickly had to shift gears in terms of making myself and my firm more competitive. Things got really real whenever my wife lost her job. So,
wow.
So she worked for the Screen Actors Guild in LA, and they allowed her to work remotely down here. So they gave her company laptop, and 3 months in, she got a new boss. New boss said, no, everybody needs to come into the firm. So she lost her job. And so here's my startup, no revenue. I'm losing money.
Right.
And my wife lost her job, and we got two kids at home.
I mean, wow.
Talk about motivation, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, not to interrupt you, but really quickly, so one of the things that I always talk about is how similar starting a financial services firm is to being a startup, right? And it's like, it's,
you know, bootstrap it,
right? Man. Got to bootstrap. Our clients are like our LPs, right? It's like, it's amazing how that works. And also for those of you out there that are wanting to start any type of endeavor, the beginning is going to be tough. It's great to have the inspiration and to do it. And you finally, you get the LLC and you get registered and all that. But when you actually got to put foot to pavement, it's tough, and then life happens, right?
Yeah.
But back into that. So, you know, the situation with your wife, and then, you know, obviously you had to dig in, right?
Yeah, had to dig in. And, you know, one key thing that really stuck with me was, and I mentioned it earlier, is there's 686,000 financial advisors in the U.S.
Right.
And so there's a lot of us. I mean, the barrier to entry to get in is pretty low. So how do you separate yourself? And for me, the finance education at UCLA was part of it, but the other part was you got to be unique.
Yeah.
You got to be you, and you got to be true to your nature and yourself, and just go out there and just tell your story to anybody that will listen.
Right. So what was the first thing that you did where you thought, where you looking back now made a tangible difference when, okay, now I hit that inflection point, right? So my mentor always says, right, there's a point where you come like this, and it's like you make that decision, and either it's going to go up and to the right, or it goes the other way. So what was the thing that you did, or things that you did, where you was like, okay, now we're starting to see some traction?
So a stronger online presence.
Okay. Like
that was the big thing. And I this is a skill that I never thought I would have, but it's building your own website, believe it or not.
Wow, you did that. Wow.
I did 5 versions of them.
So wow.
I never thought I would be able to do that, but a lot of YouTube videos and trying to figure it out yourself.
Not too many of us could say I built your own website. Wow.
Yeah. And so building my own website and just the SEO aspect of it, like the blog writing and having the keywords and having it clean and backlinks and all that stuff.
I mean, right.
In 2019, it's critical.
Right.
You know, especially if you want to grow.
Yeah,
I mean, there's many different ways to grow, but I wanted to grow using the scalability of the internet.
Right. And shout to everybody like myself who grew up with Grow Your Business cold calling. That was my thing. But again, I think being able to utilize social media well, a lot of those same skills go into it. Now, I can't build no website. I'm never doing that. That's awesome that you did that. And we'll get into the SEO stuff and like you said, being very, you know, direct in that and having intent and keeping it clean and doing all that, because I think that's a big takeaway that advisors will be able to turn this off, right? Because I'm big on the what I call the Tony Robbins effect. Is like I walk on hot coals in front of 50,000 people, and then I get home, it's Monday morning, and like, I'm still broke, Tony. What do I do now, right? So we want to give people some free jewelry when they turn this off. I'm like, okay, I can go look at Google Analytics or look at some keywords and stuff. So I definitely want to get there. But staying in that vein, right, of you, right, and building the practice, right, and you started to get into a little bit about, right, no matter who you are, what you do in life, right, it doesn't stop swinging, right? You can be very skilled at ducking and all that, but you will get hit in the front and back of the head. So talk a little bit more about, you know, your how and you mentioned, you know, in graduate school or whatever, but you mentioned the Navy. So how did all of that come together to make you how you grew up, where you grew up, right? Colorado, that whole thing. So talk a little bit about that and what got us to sitting here today.
and build
you
your
got a few hours?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it's a unique story.
Yeah.
And everybody's story is.
Yep.
Mine is, I'm from Pueblo, Colorado. It's a smaller town, about 100,000 people. My father is a Persian immigrant. So
wow.
He came out here whenever he was 17 years old, and it's the, you know, the real American story type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he married my mother, who, you know, is a relatively, you know, three quarters white, I believe is what she is.
Right.
And they had me and my sister, and they divorced.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my mother, well, to put it lightly, my mother and my father were not in a position to raise my sister and I. And so my grandparents, this is my mom's parents,
mm-hmm.
they took us in, and eventually they adopted us and sort of became our parents.
Wow.
And so they were the angels, right? They were our saviors, and
wow.
They gave us that stable household of somebody always being there and showing us love and trying to raise us the best that they could. And you know, they were older, and you know, they weren't very well off, and we lived in a trailer park, but it was a nicer trailer in the trailer park, you know.
Right.
So it was good, it was stable.
Right.
And you know, they did the best that they could, and you know, God bless them for it. But they were World War II and Great Depression style of people, where you need to toil with your hands. You need to make a living doing something that requires like physical manual labor,
mm-hmm.
right? So their path for me was to become a welder. And they said, we're not gonna send you to school. You know, school, I'm not gonna, this is you'll love my grandfather. He's a character, man.
Right.
He told me, he says, there's no way that I'm ever gonna pay for 4 years for you to party. Like, there's no way.
Mm.
So you can go to a trade school and become a welder, and that's the only way I will pay for your college.
Wow.
So I graduated high school with a 2.8 GPA.
Right.
You know, there was no focus on trying to do that well in school. And the first person that knocked on my door as an exit to get out of Pueblo, Colorado was the Navy.
Wow. Okay.
So I enlisted in the Navy in 2000, so right before 9/11.
Okay.
And did that for 4 years. So I did two tours. My first deployment was as a sonar tech, which is the most boring job if you're in the Persian Gulf.
Right.
There's no submarine threat.
Right.
But my second deployment, it was VBSS, which is Visit Board Search and Seizure. So
mm-hmm.
that was a bit more exciting. So we boarded ships in the Persian Gulf looking for weapons, drugs, contraband. We'd catch people that would smuggle people from port to port.
Wow.
And so I wore my VBSS shirt before you
were here. There you go. There you go. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you for your service, for one. Like that, that's that needs to be addressed. But in all of that, going back through what is your first memory of money?
My grandfather spending every dollar he had when he had it. But to give him credit, he never did take on debt. That was a generation where you did not take on any debt at all.
Right.
And I thought it was normal to get your paycheck and just go blow it on whatever you want and whenever you wanted it.
Right.
And it wasn't until I met my wife, she came from a very conservative type household, where she says, no,
right.
You need to save that money.
Right.
So
right.
That was my first big mental shift.
Okay.
In how to be more fiscally responsible.
Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you end up being a financial advisor.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That thanks for sharing that. And sure. Again, I think it's really important for people to understand a backstory, because a backstory is what we talk about, telling your story. It's separating myself from the 600 other thousand advisors that are out there.
And you get you different perspective on life, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. And you know, imagine being in a situation where, you know, again, I always say I'm blessed because my parents have been in my life. I have a great relationship with my parents. Now, when I hear that most people don't, I'm like, wow. And it's common that people don't get along with one parent, or some folks who don't even know their parents, right?
Yeah.
The parents gave them up, or whatever the case may be. So it's a really powerful thing to address that, and then what it means that you bring to your practice and getting into that. Do you feel like whether it's the experience, you know, from growing up, your grandfather or the Navy that you brought into how you actually work with clients now and you know, how yeah. you structure your practice, again, to be efficient and things that you were talking about?
Yeah, I think a lot of the big important lessons were from my grandfather.
Right.
I mean, my grandfather, his motto was, whatever you choose to do in your life, be the best.
Be the best, yeah.
That's it. Right. You know, he says, he would always tell me, I have more respect for the man who's the custodian cleaning up your office if he does a well job and he has yep. a lot of drive and yep. purpose behind it.
Yeah.
A lot more respect for him than, say, the attorney or the doctor who Float. Just does a half-ass job.
Yeah, yeah. Be know? Great on your level.
Yeah.
What my mother says, be great on your level. Whatever you do,
exactly.
be great on your level.
And right. so he said, take pride in whatever it is that you choose to do and do your best.
Right.
And
right.
so I've always carried that with me. And it served me well in the Navy, served me well through figuring out college and then doing well in college. And right. then now eventually into my practice and even at home, you know, relationship with my wife and right. my two young kids. It's
right.
Well, life's too short to do otherwise.
Right. And let's talk about that briefly of the importance of family to you, right? When we got to your office, you were just talking about the how it's important for you to kind of take a break, take some time off and spend time with family.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Do you kind of, because a lot of advisors now I'm noticing are, you know, their clients are asking about their family. There's like extended family. They do client appreciation stuff. Like, but right. just in terms of your immediate family, how important is that to you and how you actually look at your business, how much time you should be spending to grow it, and also the importance yeah. of being in your kids' lives. And the one thing I always talk about is our business affords us great flexibility to be able to do that.
You have the freedom to choose how you want to do
yeah,
it, which
yeah.
is great.
Yeah.
I've recently hit this inflection point, and I've talked to a few different people about it. But you know, my business is growing pretty fast, and right. I can go in one or two directions. I can go with the big scale up. You try to hire the best young graduates and coach them up, and just try to just grow, build that AUM, build that revenue,
right.
and just build a bigger firm that has more of a presence than just San Diego, but eventually Southern California, California, West Coast, so on and so forth.
Right.
Or the other path would be to build a really lean, efficient lifestyle practice and keep on those clients that I really have that deep relationship with and that I really enjoy working, but it gives me plenty of time to enjoy my family.
Right. right.
Go out and spend time with my wife and my two young kids. I have an 11 and 8-year-old at home.
Right.
You know, why not be that father who's present, who's always there and is able to take them to that football game and go out there and travel and you know, give them the best experience in childhood that they can. And so at the end of the day, it's obviously, I mean, it's pretty common sense. Like, that's what's important.
Right.
But I think, especially a lot of people here in the U.S., I mean, people lose sight of that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all about status.
Yeah.
You know, where am I in this ranking order of my peers? And, mm-hmm. you know, what is your AUM versus my AUM?
Yeah, like, yeah.
At the end of the day, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's about that true relationship that you have with your family and your friends. And so I've decided to go down path B and drive efficiency and work with the clients that I want to work with and spend more time with my kids. You know, I'm blessed. I'm in the office every day at 9 a.m. and I get home every night at 6 p.m. for dinner and I don't work weekends.
Right.
Can't
beat that.
That's a good life.
Can't beat that. Wow, it's amazing you go into the office at all being in San Diego. but before we get into, because I think there's so much that, you know, advisors watching this are going to get of how you actually run your practice. But before we get there, because I think that's going to be such a powerful and impactful conversation, staying true to that startup realm, right? And there's right, you have an iteration of a product and you release it and you think clients, you're going to give them what they want and they're going to use it this way. And then they use it a whole totally different way. And then the feedback you get, we're like, we really like all those features. We like this one.
Yeah.
And then you grow in that area. So I think as advisors, we think we believe why clients work with us, right?
Right.
But I want to ask you about that, though. Why do you think clients work with you as opposed to all of the other advisors that are in this area, right? There's some that we both know, right? Advisor really here. So why do you think that someone's like, I want to be below client? Like, why do you think they make that decision? You may not be right. Your clients may look at it like, no, that's not why. But what do you think you've either executed on or being in the marketplaces you've done well where people are comfortable reaching out to you and saying, will you please help me, right, with my personal life and in my life situation?
Because I am me and nobody else can replicate me. I think that that's it. And my experiences, my perspective, my education.
Right.
And honestly, I think a big part of it is just my storytelling. Whenever people come into the office,
right,
say, I've positioned this firm to serve you the best that you can. I made myself available to serve you the best that I can.
Right.
My knowledge of the financial markets, which I believe a lot of financial advisors lack.
Facts. I mean, let's just keep it a buck.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest.
And those are all differentiators.
But let's stay there, though, really quickly, because you mentioned we are in a time now where I always say this, like, privilege is under attack. It's okay to acknowledge your privilege. It's not cool to you know, talk about your credentials or whatever. And I always say, I say it, and I don't have any problem saying it. I think when people go look for a financial advisor right away, you should look for a CFP first, right? Or someone that is competent in the markets first. Yeah. That's just where you should go first. And then not all CFPs are great. Right. And on the bottom side, right, not all brokers are terrible, but you mentioned, right, my education, and you put a lot into that and you went and did that. And I love the fact that you leaned.
That's hard to replicate.
Right. Bingo. And I love the fact that you leaned on that, because we can get to, I want to be relatable. I want to be a friend. Well, yeah, I got a lot of friends who don't know nothing about the market. I got enough of those, right? I need you to explain this rollover to me, right? So talk a little bit about that. Do you lead with that? Do you really want to make
I don't lead with it, but I know that whenever my clients or prospects come into the office, they've done their homework.
Okay. Okay.
You know, my website is built with purpose.
Okay.
So when they go to my website, they're going to learn about me. They're going to learn about the investment philosophy that I run.
Right.
They're going to learn about the financial planning process.
Okay.
Even location. Like, these are all signals, right? Mm. Like, where my office is, when my clients pull into the parking lot and they walk through the lobby and go up to my floor, like, those are all signals, you know? And so they know, like, whenever they come and meet with me, they know who I am, where I worked, what schools I went to, how long I've been in the business. I don't have to mention it. I don't bring it up.
Right.
Because I know that they've seen it. And if they didn't notice it on my website, I have a nice intro binder I give them on their way out.
Really?
And they could see it there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So do not adjust your screens. What you're seeing is free jewelry falling from the sky. Do not adjust your screens.
I don't brag.
It's not. But that's the thing. It's not bragging. It's just a differentiator. It's just, I don't have that. Right. I can't speak to those things. And most advisors don't. But perfect segue into that. So talk about your process, your onboarding process. So let's talk about this. Let's start here, where you go from the how you utilize technology to actually prospect. Right. To when someone comes in the door, what they walk away with.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And I'm very big. And I think most good advisors are about every single touch point with the client, especially onboarding and then ongoing. So talk a little bit about your process, the tech tools that you use. And I thought that was really interesting that you said that you give the client something to walk away with.
Yes.
And the signals. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So initially with the prospect, right, it's everything is driven to my website.
Okay.
Somehow, whether it's a referral, whether they Google it, whether they, I don't know how, they go Google Map and they say, which financial advisors are near me? I want to be one of the top three people, or at least firms, that they see.
Okay.
And so whenever they see Bull Oak Capital, they go to my website. I have one single call to action on every single page that I have on my blog post, on the podcast, on everything.
Give me an example of that. So if I go to a page, what would be a call to action? Like what,
No, the single call to action is to get started.
Really?
Get started. Are you ready to schedule a phone call or meet with Ryan?
Oh, wow.
Get started.
Wow.
You go to the get started page and I break it down into five steps.
Okay.
And a big orange button that says schedule meeting.
Wow.
So whenever—
ABC, always be closing.
Always be closing. And
right.
So that's all I'm asking for is either a phone call or a meeting.
Okay.
So if they schedule the phone call, the next step after the phone, this is all high level stuff. Here's what my minimum is.
Yep.
I'm a fiduciary advisor.
Right.
You know, here's the investment philosophy.
Right.
And then, okay, next step is a meeting. Right. Get into my office.
So now on the back end, are you tracking all these analytics so you can see what page they went to, how long they stayed on the page? You track all of that, right?
Yeah. Not as much as I should be.
Okay.
I'm a one-man operation.
Yeah, I do.
And I have all the right tools, right? So Google Analytics and SERPstat is the other
one. Okay, what would you say was the second one?
SERPstat.
Okay, SERPstat. They're not cutting a check, so that's cool. Let's move on.
There you go. Yeah, the next meeting, I call it just an intro meeting, right? Okay. Everyone has that intro meeting of some kind.
Right.
But I focus on three things.
Okay.
Tell me about yourself. Always lead off with them, right?
Right.
The client starts with, I'm here for a reason. Let me tell you what that reason is.
Okay.
So I give them 30 minutes, usually is what it is, where they just go over everything.
Okay.
Then the next step is where I just talk about the financial planning side.
Okay.
The way that I approach it. And I do it very differently. I use a mind mapping method on a big whiteboard.
Okay.
And it's a big...
Well, so you do mind mapping with the client, like right there?
If they sign up.
If they do, okay.
I'll walk them through. I'll say, hey, here's what it will look like if you sign up. So let me just walk you through the process.
Wow.
Here's what a completed financial plan will look like.
Wow.
And I'll walk them through that, saying, here's how I figure out which scenario is best for the client.
Wow.
Everything.
Okay.
And then I go into the investment philosophy. And that's where I don't just say I know the financial markets and I know finance.
You demonstrate it.
I demonstrate it.
Right.
So I talk about why I invest clients' money the way that I do, which is unique.
Okay.
Right? Like if you don't have that investment background, you need to outsource that.
Yeah.
Because chances are you don't know what you're doing with your clients' money.
Right. Right.
I feel like I do.
Right.
So I demonstrate this is why I do what I do.
Okay.
And so I'm signaling that I know what I'm doing, but clients are also realizing that I get to hire this man and he's going to be a real money manager, personal money manager for me.
Right.
He's not relying on somebody else or some other expert.
He is
my guy.
Right.
So it's that boutique feel that I'm going for.
Got it. So that's amazing, right? And listen, I don't have to tell somebody else, if you're an advisor, step your game up because you're going to be losing your clients. Ryan. So let's talk about the planning process now. So what does the financial planning process look like?
It's a 3 to 4 hour long meeting.
Wow.
So I tell clients it's a big ask. Like I tell them straight up, like I'm asking a lot of you, but it's for your own good.
3 to 4 hours.
Three to 4 hours. And I tell them it's not like going to the dentist. I'm not going to be pulling your teeth from you.
Right.
It's like the traditional pen and paper method where the advisor, which I used to do.
Right.
Just sit there and ask question after question after question, just trying to pull information from that client.
Yeah, so not to interrupt you, but this is because what the best financial planning I've ever seen done was by a team that I was a part of at Merrill, and they led with planning. So they did all of the planning up front before they were an actual client. So these are people that are clients first.
I tell them we are going to do the account opening process and the financial planning process concurrently.
Okay.
At the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm not going to put
you know,
30, 40 hours worth of work
for
you to walk away and not give me anything.
Okay, so it makes sense.
I'm a business here.
Yeah.
So,
right, okay, that makes sense. Okay, so back to the process. So 3 to 4 hours.
3 to 4 hours. So instead of asking question after question after question, you saw my whiteboard in the office.
Yeah.
It's a big whiteboard.
Right.
And so I'm standing up the whole time. I'm not sitting behind my desk. I'm standing up and I'm talking about four key things. What are your goals? Mm-hmm. Life goals.
What
are you trying to achieve, right?
Okay.
I want to retire. Where do you want to retire? You know,
right.
It's like, why do you want to travel? You know, what about leaving, you know, inheritance to your kids? Like all that stuff.
Right.
Then I talk about different scenarios. By the time we're done with goals, I'm going to come up with what I think is the client's base case scenario.
Okay.
I'll have a pretty good idea of what that is.
Okay.
But then I'll talk about what ifs.
Wow.
So the scenario. So I'm really big on the scenario-based planning.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that. I'll talk about their assets, estate planning, insurance, tax, all that type of stuff.
Okay.
And so that takes about 3 to 4 hours. That's,
wow.
I'm not.
And any pushback? Do people like, nah,
no,
I know that. Do you feed them?
Because whenever we're done on the mind map, so mind map is a way to connect very complex ideas and thoughts together.
Together, yeah.
That's what a mind map is.
Right.
So whenever you're done, the client's looking at their financial life in front of them.
Wow.
And you're able to wrap
your head
around
away from
what is going on.
Wow.
And so it's a powerful process.
Wow.
I love it.
Wow. And was that something you learned in graduate school or you just created on your own?
No, I read a book and I don't remember the book.
And that's all right. They're not cutting a check either. Keep going.
So they had an iteration of this. I just changed it to what works for me.
Right.
What I think is best for the clients.
Wow.
And I've been doing it for 3 or 4 years now, and it's great.
Wow.
And so I'm still fine tuning it and changing it. And that's the benefit of being an entrepreneur, small business owner, right? Yeah. I mean, you have the freedom to change these things. So whenever I'm done, it takes about a month to put a plan together.
Wow, a month to put a plan together.
I have 3 1099 pair of planners that help me do a lot of the grunt work.
Wow,
okay. I'm always the lead advisor, of course, but it just requires a lot of man hours to put together all these different models and all these different scenarios. And so whenever I'm done, they get an electronic copy, but I print and bind
this
big-ass book that I give to the client.
Right.
Sorry, I shouldn't say that.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
But it's great because we can now compare and contrast all these different scenarios. What if you retire today versus 3 years from now versus 5 years from now?
Right.
What if you turn on Social Security at 70 versus full retirement age downsize your house versus keeping it, renting it out? I mean, all these different scenarios, you can't silo them because one decision affects the other.
Right.
In my opinion, this is the right way to approach planning.
Wow. And again, now that's what that team at Merrill does well. They create this binder that they give to the client.
Yeah.
And I always would pitch it and talk about it as a living, breathing document, right? Like, it's real. You can go in there, highlight things, make changes, keep track of goals, things like that. So let's talk about that. Obviously, there's no straight line in life. Things will change. So how many reviews do you do? Do you stick to the standard to a year or you
I
leave
reach
it up
out to clients 3 times a year do a review.
Okay.
But I'll be honest, most don't take me up on that.
Right.
So if they don't do at least once a year, I'm calling you personally.
Wow.
You need to get into my office and we need to review this thing.
Right. Wow.
And so by that time, so whenever I present, we'll agree on a scenario and a course of action.
Okay.
Very rarely we'll have to go back and change some more like options in the plan.
Wow.
But we agree to it, and then my job is to hold them accountable. So during the meetings, I'll say, hey, you said you're going to be saving an extra $1,500 per month. How is that going?
Wow.
It's like, hey, what about that estate attorney you were supposed to reach out to? You called them?
Right.
No, I haven't. You need to go do that.
Right.
That's why
they're
paying me. Like, I need to hold them accountable.
Right,
you know?
Right. And again, this podcast is not about fees or anything like that, but I will say this. The war on fees is on, but I feel like an advisor that goes that in depth shouldn't have a problem charging 1%. Just shouldn't, right? And I don't want to get into that. And people can, again, you can search and Google and broker check and do all of that stuff. We're not going to do that here.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's very few advisors going to that length with their planning.
Yeah.
And I think so long as you do that, you'll always be able to defend, hell, whatever you want to charge, but as long as people are willing to pay it, right? And that's what my mentor always says. Like, you need to find 100 people who like you and do what you do, you know, like what you do and how you do it. That's it.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can scale down how many of that 100 you want to work with. But you can't do anything without getting to that number and then figure that out. And then you can structure the business however you want. That's awesome.
Yes.
So let's get to, you know, a company that is cutting a check. You are an Altruist beta user, right?
Yep.
So let's talk about that, how that, it, you know, comes into what you're doing, your interest there, and, you know, why you felt like it was a good fit for what you do. And it seems like, right, with those that know about it, and a lot of advisors are excited, but someone that has hands-on with it right now, talk a little bit about that. And you said you even had an example as well, which is cool.
Yeah.
So let's hear about that.
So yeah, I'm a beta user.
Okay.
So far it's been great.
Right. I mean,
they're still building it out.
Right.
So I use TD for a custodian.
Okay.
And I use Orion for the performance reporting, aggregator, client interface, all that stuff.
Okay.
And it's expensive. Like, I'm not gonna lie, it's pretty expensive and it's not very easy to use.
Okay.
So pretty excited about Altruist. So whenever I have that initial meeting with the client, I will show them what their experience is going to be like. So talk about the communication and the monthly statements that I send out. And I show them the reports and the fees. So I'm like, I'm trying to be very transparent about it. And so I walk them through that. Well, this last prospect that I had who came in, I showed them what Altruist looks like. I say, look, I'm a beta user for this exciting new product called Altruist. If things turn out well, then I can replace Orion with Altruist. So this is what your, you know, this is what it'll look like if you ever log on. And
right.
They said, wow, this is super clean, very simple to understand.
Yeah.
A lot better than what you're currently using. So,
okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Knock on wood. You know,
yeah.
It all works out.
Yeah.
You know?
So let's pair two things here. So in a walk and talk, we talked about that you could possibly think about raising your minimums. And the reason why I bring that up is because I think one of the things that Jason is passionate about is that advisors' practices, when they put together, it's expensive and most times they're inefficient. But by using Altruist, it'll save advisors time and money to then maybe give you, say, maybe you want to take a flyer on someone that doesn't, that can't meet, you know, your minimum, but they could use your planning process,
yes.
Right? Do you feel like it may
your,
give you a little bit of capacity
client,
to do that?
Right. It's your cost per client, and
right.
whatever that is. And obviously, the cheaper the technology is, that's
right.
the lower the cost is. So
yeah.
you can afford, but I also have my own cost as well.
Right. Yeah,
what
yeah,
is
yeah.
my time worth?
Right, exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, all else being equal, if I were able to use Altruist versus Orion, then
right.
yeah, I should be able to service the, you know, clients with the lower asset.
Right.
But just depends upon where you want to go with your firm, what type of clientele, who you enjoy working with.
Right, right.
I don't enjoy working with younger individuals.
Really?
That's just, I mean, younger, I mean like 22,
okay.
just starting out.
Right.
That's
okay.
not my thing.
Right.
You know? But I really enjoy working with those in their prime earning years of their life.
Right.
Who
okay.
have these big college questions, retirement type questions.
Right.
These big, big decisions that can make or break their financial life and their goals.
Right. Just to tie up that point, I think, you know, the whole thing is, well, you can service someone with 100,000 just as well as you can service someone with 1,000,000. I think when you get into it, it does get more complex when
yes.
you get into the weeds with folks who make
Mistakes
more money and have more money.
Yeah.
On the flip side, which I try and get people to understand, it's not as simple as walking into an inner city community as well and telling people that they need to save and have goals and do all this other stuff. That is challenging as well on both sides,
Different.
Right? And then you have the middle, which is the majority of people in this country, 50 million people who are working poor, working, making money,
yeah.
but just haven't figured it out. They
yeah.
need access to advice, but I love that we hit on so many things that you do that our business now is trying to shy away from and people are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I can't have a minimum and, you know, and you know, I not having a big social media, Twitter presence and all of that thing. Like, you're embracing who you are and how you do it.
Yeah.
And it's stout. Like, it's so in tune, it's efficient, as you said, right? And that's a theme, I think, that weaves throughout your practice and how you run it. Any other things where you feel like your practice stands out in terms of how you use tech or tools that you use where you feel like it allows you to give better advice that you...
So it's a unique thing, right? So we're trying to drive efficiency in this business, right?
Yeah.
There's a production line-esque to this business.
Right.
It's definitely there on the investment side. You
okay.
can scale up the investment models and the way you manage money, and like that's very easy to scale up. But the planning side, you can't
because it's
more of a job shop type product. Like
right.
each individual's unique, each person's goals are unique. So you just require that the man hours to go in
yes.
there to
yep.
help provide that advice. So
yep.
technology can help make some of that better, whether it's different social security timing tools or, you know, debt calculators. Honestly, a lot of the financial planning products that I use, I'm an e-money user.
You are, okay.
But I don't lean on it.
Right.
We actually built out this giant Excel workbook that we do all of our projections and modeling and planning on.
Wow.
It's a lot more efficient. Just
yeah.
to wait, because
yeah.
we like certain things the way that they're built out and the inputs. So
right. Listen, Excel.
We just built it.
Yeah,
you
Excel
know?
Is it. Excel
yeah.
is it. Yeah. Right.
So Excel
right.
is a big driver of efficiency
and,
for
right.
us.
And,
yeah.
and before, again, before we transition, I think, you know, just from talking to you and having this conversation, I hope younger advisors and just advisors in general, right? You can, I believe you can teach an old dog new tricks if you, you know, if you force it enough. But is you mentioned a lot of I built it, right? You're very hands-on, right? You built your website, right? You had experience with certain things. And again, back to the whole startup thing. What do startup founders do? And this is, what if we could stand here and push a button on our phone and get a car? Right? Like you see an issue and then you don't just say out, you go and address it. So you did that, you know, right. The same thing with the Excel. And again, the signals of where you place your business and all these other things. So yeah. I think it's really important that people understand, right? And let's go all the way back to the beginning of the conversation that you said about your grandfather, right? Is these hands on, right? It doesn't always have to be, right? My father hates the fact that I don't like to work on cars like him. I'm like, Daddy, I like my hands like this, right? But he likes to tinker with things. But again, hands on doesn't necessarily mean that I'm lugging stuff and I'm building and it's bricks and, right? But it could be this now, right? Code, building a website, all those things.
Another saying of my grandfather, you can't be scared of a little bit of hard work.
Right.
You just can't.
Right.
You got to be willing to get your hands in there and make it happen.
Right. Yeah. All right. Y'all take a breath. The jewels, they're falling out the sky. I got some in my shoes I need to pluck out. I think to me, that's fascinating. And what I love about getting in depth with you is in our business, which is so cool, obviously outside of the physical, of us not being like, our practices couldn't be any more different, right?
Right.
And we serve people who are diametrically opposed, and how we go about it is so different too. But I also want to lean on this fact and talk about this. You said something that was really important. And I want to talk to the advisory community about this too, which is what we need to understand. Again, fees are going to zero, right? The big tech behemoths are just waiting to pounce on this industry. Vanguard is content with making sure that fees go to zero. They're after planning now.
Right.
Client experience is important, all those other things. Here's what's not going to ever go away. The human touch.
Yeah.
Very in-depth planning, like you said, and I want to lean on that point for this. You mentioned man hours and being able to take all of that data and do something with it.
Yeah.
That's what needs to happen here, right? You said you have those that you contract out to be able to do that. So I think for those in our business that are, you know, like me and want to run around and you know, be the face of a firm, ta-da, right? But in the background, at the end of the day, we can't hide from the fact people need planning. I don't care where you are, they need planning. And if it's going to be done well, I think it's incumbent upon us as an industry to embrace that, whatever you want to say planning looks like. And as tech starts to pull our business apart, that we still stay true to making sure that every single client we work with has something that, again, we walk in the middle of the street and bump our heads, something happens to us, they can always go to that document, or they can pull up an Excel spreadsheet or a Google Doc that you've been working on together and be able to manage their financial lives, right? And I always tell clients this, and I want you to answer this question before we start to tie things up, is I always tell my clients, right, there's come a point where I'm going to know I reached you, right, where I feel like that now we have a successful relationship. So when clients come and I ask them certain questions and they say, oh, I did it, right, or I took that step already, now I know, all right, I'm having an effect, right?
Yes.
Or when they are proactive, right, in reaching out and saying, oh, I went ahead and took the next step with that or whatever. So before we get into, you know, what I love is the best part of the podcast, talk a little bit about, you know, When you're working with a client, and how do you know you reach them, right? Is it a conversation?
Yeah.
Is it something where you feel like they've embraced the process away from you? Like, what does that look like where you feel like, really, I finally got to this client?
I think it's a little bit different with each client and their own personality.
Okay.
But a lot of times it's whenever they're excited to finally move forward, because there's a lot of stress. Like, they're coming to see an advisor for a reason. They have a big question. They need that help. They're getting overwhelmed. They're scared of the markets. They're scared of retiring, whatever the case might be. And so if you can prove to them with hard numbers and data that this is the best path for you to go through,
right,
and here are the reasons why,
yeah,
you see relief leave, and they're like more excited to pursue it. So, wow, I really can retire in 3 years. Like, that's huge. Or I can pay for my kids to go to school. Like, wow, like what a great thing that I can do for my kids.
Right.
I think that's when you reach them, right? Like they feel confident in actually moving forward with their goals.
Right. So, all right, here we go. And before we transition, I want to let everybody know I'm surrounded by Californians right now that are freezing. I know it. I can feel it.
They are freezing, and it is beautiful out here. I caught you doing this. It's gorgeous out here. Y'all relax. If I see somebody with a hoodie,
like
I'm going to tackle
out here.
So the genesis of this question, right, is me having conversations with people to get their answer to this question to help me heal, right? And I'm in a process now where none of this was planned. I had none of this planned for my life. And it's difficult when you're piecing your life back together to see a version of yourself that you didn't have planned, right? And I know I'm not in a place to be able to give the answer that I should be able to give, right? And I want to grow to get to that point. So hearing answers from people about this is, one, cathartic for me, and it's a salve on the wound that is continuing to heal through these conversations. So I'm grateful that people take the opportunity to sit with me. So I appreciate that. But tell me a little bit about an experience, right, that you're most grateful for that just didn't work out for you, that you wanted so badly, or something that you wanted to come together that just didn't.
That's a hard question. That's a really hard question. I mean, you could go a number of different ways, whether it's your childhood or relationships or...
What comes to mind right away? What do you think about when you're asked that?
It's a professional one, I will say.
Okay.
It's honestly my time at Merrill.
Really?
So it was my first job right out of undergrad. And I started out with an internship. So I did an internship my final year at USC. And it was in their Beverly Hills office, which is like one of their flagship offices. There's a lot of money in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, just a little.
And so I joined this team, and it was a three-man team that managed $1 billion between the three of them.
Wow.
And so the idea is I was their junior partner on their team.
The good old junior partner.
Which meant that I was their cold caller.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Gopher. I picked up the phone, dialed 300 dials a day, trying to drum up business. And it was a 401k plan team. Mm-hmm. So calling businesses, trying to bring up, 401k assets. And I don't know how good you were at cold calling.
I loved cold calling. I loved it.
I didn't love it, actually. I didn't love it. No, I did not love it. I was okay at it, though.
Right,
you know,
right.
And it's good. Like, talk about a great skill, like
of
how
course.
To deal with rejection and how to talk to people in the sales process. Like, like we can be, philanthropic all we can in this industry, but you still have to be able to sell. It's required. So I was on this team and I was doing good. And, as a Merrill junior guy, you have certain requirements that you have to hit. Well, you're on a team like this. You're hitting all your marks.
Yeah.
You're fine. Like, I had the golden ticket career-wise.
Yep.
Then 2008 happened.
Oh.
2008 happened. B of A, of course, bought Merrill for pennies on the dollar. The team that I was on didn't work out so well. And me being the low guy on the totem pole, nobody really cared what happened to me. And mind you, all of this was happening when my firstborn son was born. He was born in October 2008.
Jeez.
And so, my childhood was just flashbacks of what's going on with my childhood and being the father that I wanted to be for my son. And I lived in, I don't know if you know LA too, Eric, but I lived in Valencia.
Okay.
But I commuted down to Beverly Hills, which is on the west side.
Right.
That's an hour and a half, 2 hour drive each way. And so that, as a junior broker, trying to, build a career and just the commute and not being there for my son, it was just overwhelming.
Right.
And so I left. I joined a local Morgan Stanley branch in Valencia. So I went from an hour and a half, 2 hour commute down to a 5 minute commute. And had to really build my own book of business with no safety net.
Right.
And so I was pretty bummed about it whenever it happened.
Right.
But it was honestly the best thing that could happen to me. Like, how do you build a book of business on your own? You learn the industry by doing it the hard way.
Yeah.
There is no safety net. No one's giving you assets so you can hit your marks. You got to do it yourself.
Right.
And so that decision led me onto this path to... realizing that I told you my quarter life crisis, right? My quarter life crisis was there was nothing special about me as a broker.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not well connected.
Right.
I'm not a great salesman.
Right.
I'm not a specialist in anything. Right. How do I remedy that? Well, you go back to school. And for me, it was become a specialist in something. So that's what made me go back to school and study finance and eventually start my firm. So
wow.
All in all, I mean, it was the right move. It just took a long time to finally get to this point.
Right, right. Yeah, and I've what I'm learning through these conversations and just personally is when you're at that lowest moment, right, again, right, your child being born or some of the things that have happened to me is at that lowest moment, you're also given the seed of opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? But it's how you move forward and a lot of times the water is your tears. It's how you water that seed and things will come out of that. And, you know, I've mentioned in one of these I did with Jason is that I'm tired of crying about trying to find the answer, but I realize every time I do, I'm watering the next opportunity because the seed right. of what's going to happen out of all of the trials and the pain and the tribulation and all of what I felt I yeah. should have been, right?
Yeah.
Or the things that was going to make me special, the pain and the tears of watering that seed has birthed me sitting here with you. So I'm appreciate you, you know, for yeah. the time. And so we're going to go and get everybody here some hot cocoa so they don't freeze. Again, thanks everyone, you know, for tuning in. We are very appreciative of every single share, every single like, every single comment. There's a lot of people who work hard to put this together for you. Not only the advisory community, but the community and all of us in general. Again, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for the time. And we look forward to seeing you guys in the next one. I appreciate you.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be.